Now, I think most of you have heard about Chabun Samai, haven't you? Has he given a Dhamma talk this year yet?
He came last week.
Ah, okay. So you met him. Now, supposing you were to tell him that Unibus asked me to talk about what are we really craving and why can't we stop it? You know what Chokun will say? Oh, that's a very big topic. It's a very big topic. Because if you look at it, it's just the whole of Buddhist teaching itself. Now, when you look at that topic, you have got a few things here, a few words there we've got to make sure about. Number one is, you know, you're talking about really. Really, there's a word there. Craving, the second word here. And the third, stop. But before we start, I think it's better to get our direction right by finding out what we mean by craving. Have you all thought about craving or not? You all know craving, but how can you define craving? And are you very clear about your cravings or not? How many cravings have you got? 5, 10, 15, 20? Now, I can tell you one thing for sure. The whole of the human world is made up of cravings. If there's no craving, the world as we know it would collapse. And so that's why in modern day, in the materialistic world and all these things, you know, about power and all these things, we are actually producing more and more craving. The reason why we create more cravings is because we want to prop up the world like we know it. Just imagine when you don't have any craving, what's going to happen to you? Have you ever thought about it or not? So, but we got to define what craving is. What do you mean by craving? I checked my dictionary. This is a 1972 edition of the Webster Oxford Dictionary. It's a very big dictionary. And it gives so little information about craving. Because everybody knows what's craving. So it defines itself as wanting something. Just wanting something. And to me, that is not what we really... It's not the definition as what the Buddhists would want to define or what the Buddha is defining about their craving. Because in the Western world, in the modern world, now, like we know, craving is actually something you want. For example, when you're hungry, you crave for food, everybody will say. You know, he is so hungry that he is craving for food. But that's not the craving what the Buddha says. Things which you need, you don't really crave for, because that is part and parcel of your life. So, what is meant by craving in from the Buddhist context then? Have you ever thought about that? Maybe nobody talked to you about that. So, now, when you see, for those of you who are used to the Buddhist story, or for those of you who have been to Thai temples or Burmese temple, you can see on the wall there some photographs, you know, some not photographs, but paintings of those scenes from the Buddha's life. And one of the scenes which they depict is when the Buddha was sitting under the Bodhi tree, right, trying to get enlightened, and come this guy, you know, fierce looking and everything with three girls. And that is craving. Because he's the one which is trying to disturb the Buddha and make sure that the Buddha doesn't get enlightened. Because when the Buddha gets enlightened, he starts teaching us all this story about craving, how to stop craving, then the devil has got no business anymore. Right? So, now, in the case, what does Buddha mean by craving? Now, I wouldn't use all these funny Pali terms or Sanskrit terms, but I use all the English words we can get. Right? So, start with it. Now, in the way we look at it as Buddhists, it's not that we give a definition to it. Craving actually has got a result, right? Just imagine when you crave for something, you get a result or not. So there is craving, then it leads to an impact, and it gets your result. Something happens when you crave. Am I right or not? When you crave for something, okay, think of something you crave. For example, like food. How many of you don't crave for food? I'm quite sure every one of you has got a favorite sort of food, right? So think of a favorite food. And when you are a bit hungry, what do? You look for your favorite food if possible. Right? So you develop that one thing to it. One thing for it. You want it. Now, supposing you're thinking of a nice, proper Wagyu hamburger, right? Assuming that you're not a vegetarian. So you think of a hamburger, then what happens? I want to eat a hamburger. But if I were to give you just a few pieces of white bread, would you like it or not? So that is the thing now. You are craving for something. And when you are craving for something, you expect the thing to happen to you. Right? I'm craving for a nice hamburger. I want it. Now as you think about it, what happens? The craving gets more and more intense. Right? It becomes so real. You can imagine the hamburger there. And what happens in your body? Saliva starts to come out and all these things, you get unsettled and everything. So we go and look for a hamburger. But you go to a hamburger shop, oh, we are out of hamburgers. What do? You get disappointment. Right? So, now, supposing you were to go there and get the hamburger, you sit down and eat, what happens next? And you feel very satisfied, right? But, there's a hitch there. If you eat the hamburger and all of a sudden you get a piece of, say, a piece of nail inside the hamburger, what happens? So, that means when you are craving something, you want it to be perfect. You want it to be like what you want in your mind. Right? And so that is the sort of things. When we do craving, that's what happens. You want everything to be like what you want. Exactly. So I crave for something. For example, your exams. If you crave for very good marks, it must be that mark. If you don't make into that mark, what happens? You kick yourself or ask your friend to kick you. So this is what it is. Now, the Buddhists thought about this as one kind of craving. There are many, many different kinds of craving. Right? You crave for things which is materialistic, and you crave for things which are other than material things. You crave for beautiful thoughts, isn't you? Right? I mean, I'm talking about and beautiful emotions. You want to be happy all the time. I'm quite sure none of you wanted to be unhappy, right? You want to be happy. And what happens is when you can't get happiness, you become unhappy. What happens when you become happy? Have you ever thought about it or not? You're worried that this happiness will slip away and you become unhappy again. See, not? This is what is the thing, the progressive things in happiness. How that craving creeps into you, even though you crave for very nice things. Right? Happiness, everybody likes. You crave for happiness, you can't get it, you're unhappy. When you're happy and you get your happiness, the next thing you do is you're worried that you're unhappy. Now supposing you don't have much money, right? You go there and quietly at night you pray, oh God, please give me a pot of gold so that I can get rich. And if there's a God there, if a God answers your prayers, you get a pot of gold in front of you. What happens next? You try to protect your pot of gold. You try to make sure that nobody steals it. Your friend doesn't know and come and share your pot of gold, blah, 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 everything. Right? And the pot of gold eventually becomes your unhappiness. Right? So that's what roughly we mean by this sort of craving. Right? And we crave for emotional things. Right? Other things than that. You crave to fall in love with somebody ideal. And you go around shopping, you can't get anybody. So 15 years old, you start thinking of somebody ideal. Then after that, you're 20 years old, 25, 30, you still look at anybody ideal. So what happens? Either I remain an old bachelor or old spinster, or I can grab somebody else. And then are you happy? You know? See, that's what craving, that sort of impact our craving has on us. Now, before I go further, the Buddha doesn't, don't get the idea that the Buddha tell you to get rid of all this completely. Slowly, you start to work on it. Now, the other form of craving is, when you are in pain, do you crave or not? Yep. Okay? When you're in pain, you crave that the pain will go away, or the pain will lessen. Now, that is a form of craving as well. So I'll put it as craving positive and craving negative. Now, you agree or not? You like it or you don't want it. Anything we do not want is also a form of craving. You crave for the non-existence or the reduction of that sort of impact on us. Right? So in other words, when you are in a very unhappy situation, you want it to go away. You don't want to be associated with it at all. Right? But unfortunately, things are not that way. Right? If you can get your own way, then you won't be a human being anymore. Right? So the Buddha says, when you are a human being, you get all sorts of things which make you upset, which gives you stress, and that's what we call dukkha or unsatisfactoriness. It can be a big thing, can be a bad sickness, can be anything at all, bad failure and all this. But there are also some very small little thing that bites into you all the time. Like when you're sitting and paying attention, all of a sudden you find that there's a pain in your back and you want to move, and then nobody else move. Especially in meditation, that's the best time to show your craving. Right? You sit down quietly. And of course, no, we are not used to sitting quietly. Still. Yet, we impose ourselves, I must sit very still because everybody sits still. I don't want the teacher or the monk to think that I'm no good. So you sit very still. What happens when you sit still for 3 minutes? If you are not used to sitting still, you want to move. You have to open your eyes. You have to see what's happening around you. Right? And that is craving. It makes you do things. So, when you talk about how craving is linked to dukkha or unsatisfactoriness, you can see when you crave, when there's this idea about wanting something, the next thing which happens in your mind is what? You hold on to it. For those of you who have been through my Dharma talks before, you know where I'm going to be at, don't you? And when this clinging, then there's these ideas coming into your mind. Right? We call it this mental formation. And when you have this mental formation, then it makes you want to do something. Right? It goes into the action. And the actions actually coming out of craving will always lead to dukkha, unsatisfactoriness. That's why in the Buddha's teaching is it try to make us give up craving. When you say stop craving, well, I can say that the Buddha has taught us to stop craving, but how many of us can really do it? So what you got to do is we try to be reasonable with ourselves. Don't say that today I'm going to be a good Buddhist, I'm going to stop craving. And a lot of people think that by shaving the head and going to become a monk or nun, you'll stop your craving. You still don't. It's the training which you're supposed to do. But when you talk about this, no, stop it. As I told you before, we are born to crave. We are born and we are being taught to crave. Because as human beings, in most of our cultures, we teach people to crave, to want something. Right? Especially in modern civilization. We talk about that. If you look at the very primitive people, go back 50 years ago, you go to see some of those primitive people possibly in Africa or Mongolia or something, they do not have this sort of strong wanting of things like we do. They eat very simple food. But for us, we must have some really good, satisfied food. Then they don't go have supermarkets selling high heel shoes, do they? You go to go to the shoe shop nowadays, you can see whole rows of high heel shoes. Why do we have all these things? Because we crave to be fashionable. Right? It's not that we like high heel shoes. You can't eat the shoes, can you? You can't use the shoes for writing, can you? After all, what are the shoes supposed to do? What do you wear shoes for? Just think about it. The primary thing in wanting to wear shoes is to protect your feet. And primitive people wear shoes precisely for that, to protect the feet. But as they progress in civilization, we start to put in, maybe we make the shoe a bit different so that I have a different shoe from my mates. Then I can tell my mates, I got a better shoe than you. Isn't it? Otherwise, what do you want to go for all these beautiful shirts for? So that you can show off. You can tell other people that you have got better shirts. So this, see, these are the sort of craving which we don't normally realize that we have. And we start to, as we start to do that, you go into your shoes, you go into your clothing, houses, and so on. So as we get more progressive, our craving increases. Now there's a very good Buddhist story in Chinese Buddhism. It comes years ago, and then some clever people invented this story. I mean, it's not by the Buddha. He says, for a man or person who has got nothing, no clothes to wear, nothing, and is very hungry, what does he first thing he wants? Say, you meet a naked person out there, and then he's so hungry, what does he want? He wants food, isn't it? So he says, you give him food to eat, and then he gets satisfied, what's the next thing he wants? I want clothes to wear. Right? And now they got clothes to wear, he says, I want to have a shelter over my head. So he got a good clothes to wear, got a shelter over my head. And he started looking, maybe the shelter is not so good, I might build myself a house. So he built himself a house, and then the clothes start to, you know, if I can, starts to get better. And as the clothes starts to get better, food starts to get better, then what he thinks next? Want to have a wife. Right? It's a sexual craving. So he wants to have a wife. So he got a wife, and what's next? I want more than one wife. Don't you realize that? So if you've got, you give all the wives, then after that, he got satisfied on all his needs, on these sort of things, his bodily needs, then up here. He starts to think, it'd be nice if I can become a mandarin, right? To be an official somewhere. So he becomes an official. Then he wants to become a minister. And when he becomes a minister, what is next? I want to become the emperor. And when he becomes the emperor, who is the greatest of all in the country, what's next he wants? I want to become emperor forever. Right or not? Look at the Chinese history. Every emperor wants to live forever. Right? That's why we got a lot of those medicine which try to, you know, prolong people's life and health and all these things. So they want to live forever. Can they live forever or not? So you look at it, what's this, you know, this sort of wanting, keep on wanting. And the Buddha actually identified one of these as our weakness. The thing which leads us to dukkha or suffering is that there's no end to craving, no end to our wants. And once the Buddha identified it, then he started to teach us to say, okay, you got to be realistic about it. Can you get whatever you want or not? So, when it comes to our turn, we look and see. If you want to really think about craving, how much do we crave? And of course, I'll tell you another way of craving. There's a Japanese story this time. Now, it's a story about this stonemason. You know stonemason? People who can chip out stone for tablets, for carving, you know, everything. So he was working under the hill, under a small little hill, and the sun was beating on him, shining on him. He was sweating, he was hot, he was tired. keep on chipping the thing. He's got to do it because it's his livelihood. Then he saw a cloud covering the sun. Oh, he says, the cloud must be very powerful. The sun is making me so hot. It's so powerful to make me hot. Now the cloud is covering it. How nice it can be a cloud. So the big god upstairs, you know, heard about it. He said, okay, make the fella into a cloud. So he's there so happy every time. And then he sees the sun, he shields the sun and say, I'm powerful, I'm good. Right? Until one day when he traveled, then he sees this little hill, and the hill blocked the cloud. So he thinks, being a cloud is no good. It's not powerful enough. Why not I become a hill? So of course, you know, all kind God make him into a hill, and he blocks all the clouds. He's happy. Then after that, all of a sudden, he look at this small little man there, chipping at his legs, right, cutting the stone. He says, now I know I should be a stonemason. So that's why, you look at it, sometimes this craving will make us go round and round and round. And if you live long enough, you can see there are many, many good examples for us to be aware of what craving can do to us. The Buddha has put it in very simple formula. Craving leads to clinging. Clinging leads to mental formation of becoming. And then after that, we have this action. Right? Action of our words, of our bodily action, or the mental action, or the verbal action. And whatever it is, if anything which originates from craving, it leads to dukkha, leads to unsatisfactoriness, leads to happiness, unhappiness. Right? So, that is what say when I said we can define craving. I won't use it in two words, but this is a whole concept of how, what craving can do to you. So any questions? No? Yes?
So is craving Mara? Is craving Mara?
Mara.
Huh? Mara.
Mara.
Mara. Yes, it's Mara's action is one of them. That's why you got three daughters. One is craving. Right? And that craving is inside us. That means Mara is inside us. Right? We have keep the devil inside us. And usually we entertain the devil. We entertain Mara. Right? Now, you heard about those enlightened people. The Arahants and the Buddhas and all this. They are the people who can really push the devil out. Push Mara out. Because they already got rid of the craving. And therefore Mara is out there. And not only that, Mara or the craving is, although it's out there, is always trying to find a way back into you. And for the really enlightened people, what do? They are very aware of this craving. They know that. Now, this craving is there. In the Buddhist scripture, you can see many, many examples when the enlightened nuns, the enlightened monks, say, okay, it gives a verse that Mara is trying to give them some ideas to start the craving again. And these monks and nuns can identify it. It says, I know you're Mara. And the beautiful thing is, when you know Mara, Mara disappears. According to one story, Mara hates the Buddhists. Not to say hate in a way of, as to try to destroy the Buddhists, but because the Buddhists, even enlightened Buddhists, would give them no business. They cannot have any business at all. So, it's a good teaching to us. If we start to cut down our craving, and if possible one day, if we can give up most of our craving, then there's no little apertures or holes for Mara to come in. And do you know how many times Mara came to you today? So I won't tell you how many times, because I don't know. But I'm quite sure, over the day, there are so many Maras coming into you. So many times they come into you. So many times you got a craving. So many times you suffered because of your craving, big way or small way. And that's why it's important for us to understand what it is. Now, I told you what craving is, but how does craving arise? You know, you think that I got a brain, I think I said that I crave, I got a habit of craving. So I crave all the time, but we are not clear about it. And that's why we are always referred to by the Buddha as ignorant people. Right? Ignorance. There's no wisdom in us. If there are wisdom in us, we could have identified craving, we could have understood craving, where craving come about. But because we are ignorant, because not only ignorant, but because we are deluded by a lot of things, we can carry, no? Carry over to think a lot about things. Therefore, we cannot identify craving. We think a lot, to many of us, we think that craving is good. We think that if I don't crave, how can I earn a living? Can you earn a living without craving or not? You can, but you just don't know how to do it. Because in this world, our culture, whether you are Chinese, whether you are Asia or America or whatever, this global culture is all about craving. Don't you agree with me or not? That's why you look into the TV. How many of you watch TV every now and then? Not to say every day. I'm quite sure everybody will watch TV at some time. See what the advertisements are all about. But it's there to increase your craving. Now, supposing you see an advertisement for a pair of beautiful high heel shoes, assuming that, you know, for men you like high heel shoes as well. So you see the pair of high heel shoes, what comes in your mind? This attraction, isn't it? Assuming you don't like high heels, then it becomes the other way. I don't like it, I hate it. See that? So when you like the high heel shoes, then what happens next? I must acquire them. How much are they? See that? So I want it. Then your mind will be taken away and you start to cling to it. So tonight is when you dream, the clinging sometimes comes into your mind. You dream about the high heel shoes. Sometimes you get nightmare about it, then it can be bad as well. So that clinging will cause us to want more and more about it. So eventually, if you can afford the shoes, you have it. If you cannot, you start to think, oh, I'm disappointed. I mean, this is just an example of a shoe. But there are many other things which falls into the same category. And then, of course, there are some other so-called positive craving. Like you guys, what do you crave for eventually in this uni? You have to get a degree, isn't it? Do you think craving for a degree can get you anywhere? It doesn't. Work for the degree. Right? Work for it. Don't crave for it. That's the important thing. There's an important difference between the modern way of thinking of things and the ancient Buddhist way of thinking. You don't crave to be enlightened. You don't crave to be a good Buddhist. Work yourself so that you become a good Buddhist. Work yourself so that you can get enlightened. Anything you want, which is you think is good for you, look at it, assess it, think whether you can do it or not, and then do it. So when you do work hard for it, you're actually not entertaining your craving. Don't simply say, I crave to get something. And if you crave to get something, it makes you do a lot of funny things. Some people crave for things and they don't want to work for it. What did they do? In Asia, you see a lot of temples, don't you? What do they do in the temples? I want to get some success. So, you know, maybe not. Sometimes people pray to Buddha, but they always pray to a stone or a tree or whatever. Right? For that. Let me pass my exams. Then they go and play. Then, okay, come back tomorrow. Let me pass my exams. Do you think you pass your exams or not? That craving won't let you pass your exams. In the West, it's just the same. Every morning they pray, God, let me be this, let me be that, let me do this and that. No, that's just craving. And then, if you want something, we always pray. And that prayers itself, in that way, in that respect, is to help you to achieve your craving by trying to divert your energy from the real work itself. If you really want to pass your exams, what do you do? Don't think that I want to pass my exam. Craving doesn't help. Take your books out, take your whatever, your computer, your iPod or iPad or whatever out. Just look at it, read, pay attention to it, and so on. And I can assure you that is better way than going to pray to God in the church or praying to all the gods in the temple. So, again, when you want to achieve something, don't crave for it. Just try to work towards it. Now, that is a very positive thing. In Buddhism, we got a lot of people who want to really be like the Buddha. That's a spiritual thing. The Buddha's life is very good and so on. They want, Buddha, Nirvana, very good. They don't even know what Nirvana is, but they got the idea of Nirvana. The Buddha is Nirvana, I want to have Nirvana. So they pray, they chant every day so that they can go to Nirvana. Now you think that they can get anywhere with it? In fact, every time they chant, they're away from Nirvana. So what do you do in the case? We learn from the Buddha's teachings, what the Buddha taught you. It's not just going around and doing things which are not relevant to it. So when you talk about craving, a lot of things which ends with suffering or unsatisfactoriness is craving. But what happens before craving then? What makes you want to crave? And now we end here. Where does it start? What should some of you know it?
Six senses. The senses.
Huh?
From the senses.
From the?
Senses.
Senses, okay. The senses. Good. You got it somewhere. Right? Now, assuming that you are a human being. Right? Now, that's why Buddhism is a teachings to human beings. We can't teach the animals that. Right? We can't teach to the gods all these things. And we got to teach about to human beings who want to understand. Now, within this person, don't think of other people, you, me. Right? Look at me. What do we have? Our body and our mind. Okay? Right now. If you have a body, you don't have a mind, what happens? Or if you have a body, your mind doesn't work, what happens? They call a dead body. Isn't it? Why it makes you, why you work? Because there's a mind, the mind functions. Let's put it that way. Right? Now, if you've got a mind and there's nobody, what happens? You don't exist as a human being. Right? So, this is the very basic conditions for it to happen. Now, in the body, we find this sense spaces here. Right? What are the sense spaces then? Eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, and the mind or the brain. Right? This one is six. So, six senses. Can you add any more or not? If you can add even one more, you are a lot better than the Buddha. Well, there's only six of them. You can think, you can't add any more. So, we have this basic thing, the six sense bases. Eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, and the brain or the mind. So, that's how you start with. And that's you, and that's me. And the body and the mind got to work together. If the body and the mind doesn't work together, then there's something mismatching and the person doesn't really function in a very so-called sane manner. But for us, we are just normal people. So, it's like that. Suppose if my mind were to work very strangely, then I'll talk differently, I'll behave differently, and you think that, the fellow is mad. So, we have got these sort of things. With the six sense bases, eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, mind, okay, or we can say brain. And with this sense basis, we always receive signals from outside. That's how you think. Because craving comes from thinking, isn't it? Right? If you don't think, you don't crave. And you've got to think in a certain way before you can crave. You look at animals. Do animals really crave for high heel shoes or not? Or beautiful clothes or not? Nothing. Because the animal thinks in a very, very different way. Whereas we are being conditioned to think of it that way. Like you and I are conditioned. Now, depends on how you are conditioned, it makes you what you are now. So that's what we talk about in past to the present to the future. Right? This is a sequence. That's time according to the Buddha. It's not how many seconds or how many hours or how many years. It's past, present, future. Now, whatever you have in the past, whatever you receive in the present will determine the future. And every one of them is so quick. We call it moments. Every moment, there's a past, present, and future. Every moment, we change. Right? And that's another thing we should talk about it. You change. Now, you don't see the change in you in moments. You don't even feel the change in you in moments. But you are actually changing. If you don't believe me, physically, you do change every moment, don't you? Science can tell you that. The doctors and students can tell you that. No? You got your blood, no? Your cells changes and everything. Right? And you don't believe me, physiologically you change. Just look at the photograph of you when you're 5 years old and now. Is it the same person or is it a different person? No? It becomes the change. Only thing that momentary change, sometimes you don't look at it. Right now, you can walk very well, right? You can even run. Then suddenly, when you run, you fell, you fall down and just sprain your leg or break your leg or something. That is change already, right? Which is more pronounced change. So, past, present, and future, and there's a change. So in you, these sort of things will happen. When you are functioning, all the time things are changing. When we start to receive signals from outside, we change. What we see, we change. Look at the board now. I turn away, I look at the board. Is it the same board or not? It's not the same board physically, neither is the same board to me mentally. But because of my delusion, I think it's the same thing. You get the idea about that. Right? Now, why do I say I don't look at the same board? It's because the board have changed. You guys, we don't know the change because we can't see the change. I just look at you, okay? I turn away and say, I look at you again, you are a different person already. Right now? You can see that. But that thing, because it's an inanimate object, you don't see the change. Now, why you don't see the change? Because you think that it's more permanent than a human being. But actually, the board changes as well. Suppose if you hang this board up here, you come back 1,000 years' time, what's going to happen to it? Nothing stays the same. It's going to rot, it's going to change, whatever it is, there's going to be change. 1,000 years, you put a chair for 1,000 years, it's going to deteriorate if you don't touch it. So that is the whole thing. Things do change. But because of our mind, we think that the things don't change. Therefore, we want the thing not to change. Right? When we are in a very nice situation, we do not want the situation to change. Do you think it's right or not? How many of you have been to a very nice holiday? 7 days holidays, go somewhere. And on the seventh day, what's happening to you? You have a very nice holiday, but unfortunately, I have got to go home. Right? And that's what happens. Right? So things change. A happy occasion, when you go to leave it, you feel unhappy. This change. And this change It's a very important concept in Buddhism. Impermanence. It's very, very important. Look at this impermanence. And because we cannot get used to this impermanence, therefore we get into the state of dukkha or unsatisfactoriness. All right? Any questions? And that has got to do with all these things as well. So now I go to the next step. When you have got these six senses, the body and the mind, you are ready to act. Right? So at any time at all, our six senses are open. We do get affected by what we call the sense objects. What are the sense objects? For the eyes, it's called form. Right? The form is something which you can see. Right? You can identify. And usually something with a shape, a size, or a color. Right? Something which is, you think, is a real thing. Right? Of course it's a real thing, but the thing changes. Okay, so that's what we call form. A human being is a form. A telephone is a form. A Buddha image is a form. Because things you can see. It's got to do with your eyes. And with this form, you get a thing called sight. And with the ears, what is that? Sound. Yeah, right. Sound. Okay? You can identify the sound. And with the sound, what arises? The ears and the sound, it becomes what? Hearing. Now with the nose, we get smell. Okay? And we call it smelling. People say, the tongue, we get the taste, and we get tasting. What's next? With the body. Now, although these are in the bodies, we separate them because they have got their own function by themselves. Right? So when you get this body, we get the touch, right? And we get the touching feeling. The feeling of touch. Right? And with the brain or the mind, I use brain because usually we use mind. It's more difficult to think of the mind. What do we have? Thought. And you got thinking. So these are the things that makes the world go round. Now, in our daily life, we're always being bombarded with one of the six. Right? And when we're bombarded with these six, what happens? Now take an isolated case. You look at that. When your eyes set on that image there, what happens?
Life is life.
You see the thing there. You see. That's the thing. And the seeing itself is a sensation. Right? So when the eyes come into contact, then there is this sensation. Right? A feeling of your eyes. Now, do you get a sensation or not? You hear something, right? So that's the sensation of the ears. Or, next one will be, if you smell something, right? If you light the incense, it's very nice. Or if somebody in front of you has got a BO or something, then that is not very nice. Now, why do you get that? You see, you smell something. There's this sensation. Right? The sensation comes into three different forms. Number one is pleasurable or pleasant. Nice sensation. For me, my eyes set sight on that, my sensation is very good. because I was brought out as a Buddhist, to us, that is a holy image, right? And we respect that, and so on. But supposing you give to those Talibans, what do they do? Yeah, similarly, you got those IS people coming in here. They look at that, they take the axe and chop it into pieces. Won't they? Yeah? So, to them, that is unpleasant. Okay? So, the unpleasant things, we try to get rid of. And the good things, we try to hold on to. When I look at the Buddha image, the next thing to do is I cling onto it. This is very beautiful. Where do you guys get it from? Of course, I know where you got it from, because I was here since the first day of Unibat. Right? But that's a very nice thing. So when I see that, it's so nice, I just bow down, pay my respects. But you expect the IS people, the Taliban, to pay respects, right? They take the thing and then they step on it. Right? So, the same object, but why are those two different ways we acted? It's because in one case it's pleasurable, the other one is unpleasurable. I see it as a pleasurable thing, therefore I like it. And when I like it, this is where I get my craving. The other guy doesn't like it, so it becomes a negative craving. So that's how craving starts. When your eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and all these things meets an object, and that thing starts to come in. The ideas start to come in. And how do ideas work, man? I think my name is not important, so I just erase the thing. Okay? Where do these ideas start? Basically, in every one of us, we have got certain common qualities, common things which we have. Number one is consciousness. Right? In our waking times, we are fully conscious. In our sleeping time, we are semi-conscious. Right? So, this is the two things. And when you knock out, you become unconscious. So, in the case of modern science, you look at the three levels of consciousness. Whereas the Buddhists look at it, there's a general consciousness. That means the consciousness of this brain working. Your waking time, you're always conscious. So there's this consciousness. But at the same time, you've got to have this other consciousness as well. The other consciousness will be the eye consciousness, meaning that the eyes is able to see. That's eye consciousness, right? Supposing a person who is modern, politically correct, them is vision impaired, right? That means if they are blind, then they don't have eye consciousness, so they cannot see. Right? Same thing with the you guys can see, so I wouldn't say I know how it's like to be blind. But ears consciousness, that means you are not deaf. You can see. You can hear, right? If you don't have any ear consciousness, you cannot hear. Then nose consciousness, similarly. Have you ever got cold or not? When you catch cold, can you hear, smell anything or not? You lose your nose consciousness for the time being. So that's how it is. Then tongue consciousness, you are able to taste. Sometimes when you eat really hot food, a lot of chili, and it just numbs your tongue, then your tongue loses the consciousness, you can't taste the other things. So, and then your body consciousness, of course, able to feel the thing. Pinching gives you body consciousness. It makes you feel the thing, react to it. Something pricking you, or the body consciousness will tell you whether you are comfortable or uncomfortable. Now, the best thing to look at it is when you do your meditation about this body consciousness. And you sit down there, cross your legs, and what happens? 5 minutes, okay. 10 minutes, okay. 15 minutes, okay. 20 minutes, what happens? You start to get a strain, isn't it? And you can see, this is your body consciousness working on it. Right? And then, of course, the mind consciousness is this big consciousness which do everything else. And also the mind consciousness will allow you to come and pick things up in your thoughts. It may not be a real thing. I give you an example of mind consciousness. Let's go to Mars. Were you in Mars already? You're conscious of Mars. Right? But your Mars and my Mars are very different. It's because you have got your fantasies, your imaginations and everything. And that's how this mind consciousness works. Right? That's why we have got a difference of things. Because of that mind consciousness, therefore, that is a very holy image to me, or that is a very bad image to other people. Right? So that's how we work on. Now, this is the basic of the whole thing. Because without that, you can't operate. Now, with this consciousness, when you come into contact with something, there's a feeling in it, there's a sensation. What does this sensation create? So you've got this sensation. And the sensation will create something which we call perception. Now, I've got to warn you, this is not a lesson on psychology, okay? I'm not doing a modern psychology. I'm telling you what the Buddha taught. Now, when you look at a thing, there is sensation. The next thing which arises is perception. What do you mean by perception? You recognize the thing. Okay? You can recognize the thing and identify the thing in the first level. Identify, just know. Phone. Black phone. Number two. And then after that, your brain starts to work. And that's what we call mental formation. We have got the image, and then we start to judge the thing. This is a phone, this is a black phone. Old model. Oh, no, this is not a phone at all, isn't it? It's a tape recorder. Okay, now reset. Because the perception just now was phone. Right? And that's a wrong perception. So now, tape recorder. Black tape recorder. You see that as you go on, you're going to that mental formation. It's a beautiful thing. You're judging it already. You're putting a value on it. Right? And from the mental formation, this is mental formation part one, where you put a value, and the part two is, what am I going to do to it? Am I going to take it? Am I going to ask for it? And am I going to throw it away? Whatever. And that mental formation will lead us to doing our action. Now, the action is mental action. I really hate it. I want to throw it away. I want to. I haven't done it yet. So that is the mental formation. That's the will coming out to us, make us do things. And then from there, we start to have these actions. Actions in the mind first, then action in our body, and then action in our speech. Right. Supposing somebody comes in at this moment, he opens the door, he walks in. Now, what should I think? The bugger is late, isn't it? So my contact is, straight away I see him, there's this physical contact. And then my mind starts to work. Like I got this sensation of that person. After that, what's next? I'm perceiving it as somebody who is late. Right? And that being late is not a good thing in this country. It's all right now when you are in China, you can be 5 hours late. But not nice to be late here, since I talk here and you must be on time and so on and so forth. Right. So, when it's late, what is the mental formation? It's rude, isn't it? Then when it's rude, it's through the way I'm conditioned again. Right? If I'm from China, it's all right, welcome, you're 5 hours late, no mind. But I'm in Australia, I'm Australian, you jolly well come on time. The mental formation is you are being rude. And when somebody is rude, you tell him off, right or not? This is our way, isn't it? So, blah, 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 you blah, blah, blah. And what do I create? Mental action, my deeds. Of saying something which he doesn't like, and so on. Right? Now, before I can create it, I can do all these things, what's happening in my mind? I say he's rude. The moment I say he's rude, or I perceive him to be rude, I'm already angry. I'm upset. And have you ever been upset before in your life or not? Yeah, all of you better shake your head and say, yes, you have been upset. When you feel up, when you're upset, how do you feel? Do you feel like kicking your heels? Do you feel like putting your hands up and saying, very good? No. You're boiling inside there. Both physically and mentally, you are in the state of unsatisfactoriness. Right? So, it starts from all this craving thing. Now, where does this craving start? In here. When you start to have this perception. The moment you have this perception, craving starts. Right? And then that gives you this mental formation. It's somewhere around here. And then you get really upset with things. And when you get upset, you are suffering. And if I say something nasty to the guy, I might regret it later on. Say, a good Buddhist teacher shouldn't get upset. So I go home, I go, why should I get upset? Why should I get upset? It's worse, because one simple lack of giving, telling somebody off, I got upset. I carry the thing home. When I go home, my wife starts to say, why are you home late? Then I start getting angrier, and I shift the anger to her. Right? So we start to have a quarrel. You see, a simple thing is somebody pushing the door and coming late, and I did something to it. That is what we call the ramification. And that's what the Buddha says, watch it. Right? Does all this thing happen to you or not? How often does it happen? So, just be aware of it as it happens. The Buddha taught us a way to be aware. Can you tell me how to be aware? One simple word. You all had a meditation somewhere last month or this month? Huh? What's the meditation about? Very, very simple thing. Now, you ask me to say how you stop. Before you can stop, just be mindful. And when they're mindful, you will stop it. People who are mindful will hold their tongue. Now, when the fellow walks in, I start to get upset. Then I know I'm being upset already. Stop it there. Right? Hold my tongue. Hold my sensation, hold my feelings and all these things. Okay, you come in, it's all right. Then, nothing happens. I won't regret for what I've done, and so on. So this is the whole thing. You want to stop your craving, be mindful. And where you learn mindfulness? If I tell you to be mindful, you all, I know how to be mindful. I walk. Just now I was mindful, the bus didn't knock me down. That is very simple mindfulness. This mindfulness is deeper than that kind of mindfulness. This mindfulness is enabling you to know your craving when it comes in. And when you start to know the craving, what's before that? And then you cut it off. You stop it there. You might not be able to stop in one or two goes or five goes or 10 goes. But after a while, you develop that. You start to be mindful of small things first, which cause you to be upset. And then slowly you work on those big things. Right? So when you want to talk about stop craving, don't think that I'm going to stop today and that I got no craving tomorrow. No matter how much you try, you will never be successful. Right? Resolutions don't work. Say that I want to do this, I want to do this. It's just like going to pray. Right? It doesn't work. It's just try, work on it, A, B, C, D. Right? Now, how do you learn how to walk? First place, look at a baby. Does he know how to walk or not? You got to still learn how to get up, to sit, then how to crawl. and frog crawling slowly, you know, holds onto it. And then after that, potter around, walking, and then finally walk. Now, to tell you to give up craving tomorrow is the same as asking you to run before you even know how to walk, even know how to crawl. So you got to start somewhere. And that's where the Buddha's teaching comes in. He didn't say that by believing in him, you get rid of a craving. It doesn't happen. It's not a believing religion. Right? The Buddha says, listen to what I've got to tell you. I'm giving you a direct path to get rid of your suffering through being mindful. Right? And you start to be mindful. We start to be mindful at all stages. Right? Whether it's mindful of mental formation, mindful of clinging, mindful of craving, mindful of sensation. And you can, of course, you know, look into this. When you have the sensation and you don't want to act on it, you cut it off, then it doesn't develop. Right? So in the case of that links, because one is linked to the other, you just have to cut off one link and nothing goes. If I see the fellow coming in late, if I just tell my mind, if I don't get upset about it, will anything happen or not? Nothing. He just walks in. I just keep on talking. Be all right. But if I start to get upset with it, then it affects my talk. If I get more upset with it, I got to stop and then tell him off. Which do you think I would prefer? So, that's the whole thing. Just be clear about things. And this mindfulness makes us a lot clearer about the way our mind works. Right? It's not simply sit down there and be mindful, close your eyes and meditate. What do you meditate for? As you close your eyes, you observe your breathing, then you've got to observe your working of your mind. How are you affected by things? You sit down there, you look at your craving. I want to crave for comfort. But after 15 minutes, you start to get, you know, pinch at needles, that is discomfort. See, look at your discomfort. What do? Want to hold on to it? Yes, you can hold on to it and get more pins and needles. You want to stretch your legs and get rid of it? Well, I crave for the teacher to say that I'm good, so I don't want to stretch my leg. So, what do you choose? But, as the Buddha says, when you get it, slowly getting rid of ignorance, when you start to get a bit wiser, then you make your choice a little bit easier. It's because we are so obsessed with our mental formations, with our way we think and so on. Therefore, we cannot think clearly and we cannot make a good choice. And most of the time, our choices are going to cause us problems. Okay, anybody disagree with that sort of statements? Or any questions? No, I like enlightened people. I think you're all enlightened now. I mean. So, to sum up the whole thing, you say that craving to people who are not trained is a way of propping them up. Do you agree on it? All of us are. No, we are not well trained yet. So we are propped up by our craving. If you don't crave, you won't live the next day. Right or not? What makes you want to wake up tomorrow morning? At the lectures. And do something. So, that's craving. But can you say that I have no craving, therefore I don't attend lectures? Not either. So that is where the problem is. And you got to be really, you know, having some ideas. If I don't attend lectures, then I won't be able to progress in my studies. And if I really crave to attend lectures, it might make me go and attend lectures. But can you really tell yourself that I'll attend lectures without craving or not? If you can do that, then you will definitely do very well in your studies. But if you are being pushed by all this craving and all these things, the moment you stop your craving, nothing happens. So, just be clear about things. Don't say that, I stop all my craving today. I just reduce my craving on the unnecessary things and then work my way from there. Right? If you crave for a red pair of high heel shoes, if you're a man, you want the high heel shoes, then you think, no, should I have it or not? Right? Just look. What's causing all these things? Do I need a pair of high heel shoes or not in the first place? Right? So when you start to be clear about all these things, and then, okay, that's it. I'm not having it. You save yourself some money, you save yourself some mental energy, you can do something else better. So start looking and be mindful at how your craving arises. Every time you see something, does it have an impact on you or not? And if the impact is going to be negative, going to cause you to be upset or to cause you a lot of problems, then think a second time to see whether we should proceed with this sort of things or not. It's not a prohibition. That's why in the first place I don't tell you what are the things you crave for. It's not. You crave for so many things. I can have a big volume there if I write all your cravings there. There's no end. But only you yourself will know what the craving have done to you. Now, another thing to remember is don't start to work on the big problems. Work only on the small problems first. If you don't have the energy, you want to clean up a big rock, you can't do it. Take away the little bit of dust, take a little bit of pebbles, take a little bit of those rocks there until you develop the skill and the energy. Then you look at the slightly bigger one and the slightly bigger one. Don't think that by being a good Buddhist, you say, I can show everybody I'm a good Buddhist. I stop this. I stop eating my laksa tomorrow. I stop going to the movies tomorrow. I stop watching TV tomorrow. You do that, you're stupid. But just try and work on it. Right? Mindfulness comes slowly. Remember, learning to be mindful is just like a little baby learning how to walk. It's got to be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And of course, when you learn how to walk, then you can learn how to run. Does that answer your question about stopping craving? Okay. Any questions? Final questions? If not, no?
I've got a question.
Yeah?
So, what is the difference between craving, love, and greed?
Well, depends on what you mean by love.
Like, in general, love of eating, love of people.
Okay, we love a lot of things. Okay. For us, when people talk about love, they always think of the Hollywood kind of love. Boy loves girl. And then boys chase after girl, or girl chase after boy nowadays. And then they leave. Then after they get married, then live happily ever after. Do you think that is the point? Don't forget the Buddha says impermanence. Right? Love will change. What is the basis of our love? Right? I mean, assuming that you love somebody as a partner, what is the basis of it? You like the fella or the whoever it is, your partner, for his or her looks, right? Number one is the looks. Number one, the second one is behavior, and so on, all these things. Then they say, okay, it's a basis for you to fall in love. But there are a lot of stupid people who say, yeah, I look at it, the chemistry is right, I must love. That is not love. That is what you call it, desire. So just be very clear about it. Now, assuming that you have got this love existing, then you've got to look at what is this love you're talking about. Now, you would mention the word greed. Sometimes love has got to do with greed, isn't it? And you think about it, I love you 2 units, you love me back 3 units. How often love happens that way? In fact, it happens all the way like that, right? In our modern materialistic life. I love this woman, so I must get married to her. And what happens is, I expect her to cook for me, I expect her to wash for me. And then the woman says, I love this man, I expect him to take care of me. Right? So it becomes an exchange. And the sort of love will change. And if, it's not that it's bad or good, but if one of the partners refuse to accept these changes and don't go along with these changes, then what happens? There's this break in relationship. Right? The love is no longer there. You've got to be mindful of that. Okay? So I'm not saying that love is no good, but just be aware of this sort of things happening. Now, supposing I love somebody, now, in fact, I loved somebody years ago, right? And she eventually became my wife. Look at her, she was very beautiful, you know, when I married her at 22. Beautiful girl, very attractive and all these things, you know. And I think she's the most beautiful woman on earth, or the most beautiful girl on earth. But after 15 years of marriage, one day I woke up and said, look at the woman there. And now if you look at her, I see an old woman there. And don't tell me that she's not looking the same thing at me. Those days, this young man of 25, dashing, beautiful, the most handsome man on earth. After 15 years, starting to get bald. And now when she looks at me, all the wrinkles, I mean, that's old man there. Now, the reason why we're still together is still because of we don't understand the thing that's changed there. But the one, the person I'm married to is no longer there. It's just an impermanence. She's long dead. Now I'm married to a different person. And I'm going to accept that or not. So I'm willing to accept that, therefore I'm still married to her. Same thing. She has agreed to it that the handsome bloke she married long ago was dead. Now she's married to an old man. And she's willing to live with an old man. Therefore, we're still around. Now, supposing she refused to, or I refused to, what happens? We go and see a lawyer, sign the papers, you go your way, I go my way. So that's the whole thing. Now we got to develop this understanding. Understand the thing. The person which we love is no longer there, right? Because of impermanence. So, when you look at it, the love which comes with greed doesn't last. But the love which comes with able to go along with this impermanence will last. Now, there's also love of a parent on the child. You're right, right? We all come to a family where there's some love, maybe a lot of it. But if the love gets too demanding, what happens? What happens if your parents think that you're a 12-year-old child? It's this. Someday you tell your parents, you don't think that I haven't grown up, have you? So, being a parent, we got to understand that there is this change in the person. And we can get along with the change and go along with it. So treat a person differently when he was 6, or 12, or 18, or 20, 25. So this is the way. The Buddha says, be aware of impermanence. Know it. You can't get rid of it. Nobody can get rid of impermanence. Even God can't. So for us, we train ourselves to be aware of impermanence. Let's answer your question. It's not that love is no good. But if you do not understand the real meaning of love, then you're going to get problems. If I say fall in love with a girl and say, okay, I want you to make up beautifully. So she make up beautifully, you're very nice. But the moment she has got no makeup, what happens? You're ugly. So this is our mental formation, our demand, our wanting, our craving.
Say for example, something simple, like say chocolates, or maybe money is a good example. So what's the difference between a person craving for money, love of money, or greed for money?
see, this is a very closely related, very, very closely. If you don't love money, you won't crave for money, would you? Or if you hate money, then what happens? You will never make money, right?
Yeah.
Even though if you really hate money, I can't stand money, if the people give you money, you just throw it away, isn't it? So you must have the love for the money before you crave for the money. But what I'm talking about is when we need money in this world, okay? We need money to survive. But it's up to us to put a level to how much need we have. Right? If you think that I need $1,000 to survive, right, to pay my food, my rent and everything, a week, for example, and then to be very comfortable, and if you're happy with it, then you got no problem. Then you work to get $1,000 and that's about it. But if you've got a stronger desire, now, which invariably everybody will have if they're not trained in the Buddhist way, they're still looking, okay, I make $1,000. If I can make another $500, it's going to make me buy extra car or no. And then it's up to the person. But if that craving is going to cause him a lot of problem, then he should look into that craving. I'm not saying he should stop the craving. So it's not that we shouldn't have ambitions. Now, Venerable Dhammananda has written a very good book of ambition. Because we always look at craving and ambition to come together, but no. Ambition and craving can be separate. Read the book and then you find out. We can have ambition to be something, but we have got to be reasonable with the ambition. And that's why in the case of the Buddhist community, the Buddha has put us into two different categories. One of them is to be a monk or a nun, where you try to get rid of as much craving as possible. On the other hand, the Buddha has got this lay people where we are allowed certain laxity in our craving. Like we know that you got to live. You know that you got to make money. But the Buddha gave advice to us to say that just be aware of it. And to be aware of it is to develop this mindfulness. Look at it. Are we reasonable with ourselves or not? There are some people who work 5, 3 or 4 jobs, right, just to get money. Why? So they can buy a house in Vaucluse, right? All these expensive suburbs and all this. Now, what for? Can you afford it or not? If you can't afford it, you crave, you work very hard for it. Otherwise, you get jealous of other people who has it. Right? So, that's the difference, right? Being reasonable and giving in to your craving. When you crave for something, you can't get it. You feel bad yourself. Then eventually, if you are not careful, you start to be jealous of people who has it. And when you are jealous of people who had it, then you yourself is suffering. You can see a lot of people complaining, why should they have it? Why should they have it? Now, this talk is not meant for you to say that, oh, I'm going to be a good Buddhist, I don't crave. I stop my craving, so I'm not going to study. I'm going to pack myself to go home and go and live in the forest. If you are not careful, even though you give up everything and you live in the forest, you will still have craving. You're not craving for material thing, you're not craving for a degree or anything. You crave for something else. Unless you train yourself very well. Yes?
Can I just ask a technical question?
Uh-huh.
You said there are only 6 senses, but surely there's others.
Mm.
Like the ear gives you a sense of
balance. Sensation?
Yeah, a sense of balance, and the body gives you senses of appetite, you know, thirst and hunger, temperature. Brain gives you a sense of direction.
By the time you feel hungry, there's a perception.
Yeah, but that's still a sense, isn't it?
Yeah. No, the thing is, that's why we put it, we try to give a sort of the stage of development from the sense, then when you reach the perception, you know they're hungry. Because your body...
I'm not arguing, I'm just saying it's more 6 senses.
The 6 senses?
There's lots of senses.
No, you see, your body will sense.
Okay.
What's the mechanics of being hungry? The stomach, right? It's empty, so it sends a message to your brain.
Yeah.
Right? And so the brain senses it, and the stomach senses it. So there's this sensation. And then they got this particular sensation, because your past, you got a memory experience. You know that this sensation tells you you're hungry. So that's why hungry comes in between this and this. You start to get hungry, you get a perception. Right?
So hunger comes under sensation?
It comes, no, hunger, that. People, when you say feeling of hunger, that's already perception. The feeling is just a raw feeling. It's just like, you know, looking at the thing before I know what is a Buddha image, I've got to have a sense of something I see. So there's this particular sensation in your body which you perceive to be hunger. Right? Now, suddenly you got this, like that.
Yeah.
You feel the pain, isn't it? Now, when you feel the pain, it's already in perception and mental formation, usually in perception. But the thing is, you feel that sensation. Right? You feel that sensation, and the sensation, the unpleasant sensation, relates to your past experience and say this is the pain caused by pinching. Right? So that's why I don't want to use the word feeling, because sometimes when we talk about feeling, it means, you know, our emotional feeling as well. It's not emotional yet. When we come into contact with certain thing, there is this impact, and that impact is what they call sensation. And from there, it develops into. Now, supposing I look at this thing, I've never seen before, right? The perception of the thing as what it is doesn't arise, but the perception of what it is not, I say, okay, what is that? You know, so that is the perception of I don't know. So it's that, you know, then you set your eyes on certain things. Right? So whatever comes later, thinking of now this is a pain of pinching already, it's already into mental formation and gives you it's not a very nice desire, not a very nice feeling. And that feeling is no longer a sensation, but a feeling of emotions. Right? So that's why all the time, you know, people put feeling there, I won't use feeling because it's a sensation rather than a feeling. To us, feeling means, you know, the way your mind works, and then it's an emotional feeling. It's not nice, I don't like it. That's a feeling, we call generally. But in Buddhism, we call it sanya or something like that. But that's a sensation where if I touch this, there's that sensation. And that sensation, then I perceive it to be touching wood. Yeah. Okay, any other questions? No more time to come. So, can craving be motivation? Yes. But if you don't have cravings, now when I'm talking about modern day life, right? It's a global thing. We work, that's why I told you, we work on the cravings all the time. So we make use of the craving to motivate people. But can people be motivated without craving or not? I told you just now, right? Do you attend a lecture tomorrow because of this craving to get a degree? Or do you attend lecture tomorrow because I have to attend lecture tomorrow? That's the difference. Do you need the motivation to? Do you need the craving to be your motivator or not? Look at it. Just think over the thing. Can you be motivated without craving? If we understand it as a normal human being, we can't. Right or not? If there's nobody to push a sharp stick it behind your backside, do you think you run or not? But can you run without somebody pushing a stick in your backside? That's the difference. Okay? Do you answer your question or not? Yeah, no, see, it's alright for us to have ambition, but you got to make sure that what is this ambition? Can you achieve the ambition or not? And what's this ambition going to happen to you? What's the result of your ambition? Right? Okay, assuming that you're going to be inspired to be, you got ambition to be the president of the United States, okay? It's a great thing, but it's a very good example to give, I think. Now, what's going to happen? You got to work very hard, isn't it? You think, you know, now what Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton having a good life? Right? Supposing you, if you think, I need to be the president of the United States or not? See that? Okay, now, for you students, okay, I want to, the fact is that I come to uni because I want to have a degree and having a good job and a good life, right? That is good enough motivation, right? And that becomes your ambition, right? But if you really are not cut to study that, what do you do? I know, because if I want to enroll myself in uni to do mathematics, I'll be out. Because I can't even know the first part of calculus. So should I enroll in the course or not? But I know that I'm very good at botany. So if I enroll in botany, I know I'm going to do very well. Now, should I have my craving to become an expert in mathematics and cause a lot of problems to myself, or should I go and enroll myself in botany? So that's, you see, I can't really give you a definite answer. Because Buddhism itself is not something we say, you must go this way, you must go that way. It's for you to give you all the inputs to let you make the correct choice. To make you correct choice as it should suit you. That's why we don't have all the books of Buddhist rules, right? Like the Muslims and the Christians do. We don't have rules. So the Buddha tells you, okay, you do this, this is going to happen. You do that, that's going to happen. You make up your mind. So that's why, you know, we don't have very dogmatic Buddhists around. We don't go down and say, you must do this. And I really was very upset when I say this dogmatic Buddhists nowadays, because they're learning from the Western world. They tell you, you must be a vegetarian, otherwise, you know, you go to hell. So, this is the thing. We give you all the inputs, and you being an intelligent animal, or intelligent human being, you just work on it yourself, say whether it makes sense or not. And then, of course, there's additional practice. That's why I wrote the word mindfulness on there. Just be mindful and just know how, just monitor the way you think and all these things, and then finally work the answer for yourself. And then you be your own master. Otherwise, you forever be going Bante or Reverend or whatever. What shall I do? See, I've never told you what to do. Yes?
I just have another question about, you were saying at the beginning of your talk that when you have happiness, you crave for that happiness to continue. If you have love, and even with a partner, and even if you expect that you and your partner will change over the course of your life...
Well, we always can expect to have a very good one, but...
Yes, but at some stage, you or your partner will die, and that seems like a lot more of a change to accept, and it's a source of craving.
Always have this word impermanence imprinted on the back of your brain. Things change. You might have a very lovely, good relationship. You go together, you work together, all these things. Sometimes, when situations change and one of you really can't fit into the change, then just watch the thing. Right? Try to make the change if possible. And that's why in the other teachings of Buddhist ways, we are teaching people how to be tolerant, how to coexist with others. It doesn't mean that, oh, I you are like that, I expect you to be like that forever. It's impossible. So when you get a partner, as the partner change, and then if both of you change together in a positive way, then the relationship will last until the day one of you die. But if there's this change and one of the partners refuse to change or resist the change, then there will be problem. That means, you know why we have conflicts? It's because of that. Our ideas change. I may agree with you perfectly today, but tomorrow somebody will just, I get more input into it, I say, you might be wrong. Never happens. We have an argument, we have a debate and all these things. And again, if I hold on to my views and you refuse to accept my views, things goes wrong. But if I hold on to my views and slowly you can say, I can accept the way you think, is a different thing. You might not think my way.
Even if you positively change together with your partner, when one of you dies, the other will be suffering. So,
well, look at it. Right? That's why if you get the inward impermanence behind your back, you know that the moment you see a dead body, yes, that's impermanence. That is a practical lesson. Right? You know, in the sutta or in the discourse of the Buddha about mindfulness, he asked his monks, go to the Shana ground, go to the place where they leave the body, you know. Now in the olden days, people don't bury. So they put the bodies in the place, a special place, to let it rot. And the birds come and peck on it. So he says, go and see that. And then you are looking at death, looking at impermanence right in the eyes. Because you see, a corpse is died today, a corpse is 5 days old, and so on. And the Buddha is a very practical person. He doesn't hide things under the carpet. Go and have a look and see for yourself. Because that is what you are going to be. And what do you do in the modern day world? How many of you have seen a dead body before? When you go, even the dead bodies... The dead body is very well presented, isn't it? Unless you work in the coroner's office. Then you go and see in the coffin in a funeral, so beautiful, all the makeup and all these things. But if you had, during a Buddha's time, you can see the fella bloating. And to us, even the mere mention of it is disgusting. But we are avoiding facts. So just be factual with things and be just like... Okay, any other questions? I think I'm going to overdo my time.